Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executive After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. Today on the show, I had the pleasure to interview Dana Malstaff. She is full of awesomeness. She is the author of Boss Mom. It's a wildly successful book about balancing the life of motherhood, not feeling guilty, and having a business on the side. Her Facebook group is massive, like 20,000 plus, 15,000 active members. But more importantly, Dana and I have a ridiculous conversation where I eventually, as I re-listened to the podcast, probably offended her somewhere along the line with religion and my sweeping generalizations of society and life and all. So, but she was a trooper and she was awesome. I also go on a very long story in the middle of this about how I met Mary. So enjoy that bombastic example of my story of life. Also want to say thank you to my content partner, C-Suite Radio. You guys are awesome. I'm looking forward to traveling to New York next week to get interviewed for my book. I actually had someone read the first chapter, and the feedback was awesome. Like, they were really surprised at how engaging and thoughtful and conversational it was. So I'm really excited about making that available to you guys here in the next probably 2 to 3 weeks. So, all right, stay tuned for today's episode, Dana Malstaff. Remember, go to iTunes, leave a review, put a like, go to overcast.fm, put a gold star next to Executives After Hours. All right, everyone, have an awesome Monday. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Like, box that he brought me from Dubai.
Yeah, it's man, back in the 90s, Dubai would have been 1,000 times different than it is now.
Like, oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah. So now listen, can you please, for my educational purposes, tell me how to say your last name and first? I know first name is Dana.
Dana, like Dana Banana.
Son of a bitch. See, I know someone who spells it the exact same way and he goes by Dana.
I know. My mom should have put an extra N. I actually put an extra N in my phone so Siri pronounces my name right. yeah. Otherwise, she's like, Dana, somebody. I'm like, my name is Dana. Yeah, it's funny. So like Dana Banana.
Yeah.
And then my last name is Malstaff, like a mall you go to and like a staff you hold.
That one was easy, but you know, like, I always get nervous about that. Dana. All right. So,
I don't really care. Yeah. If you knew how many times I've been on an interview and they say it and then they're like, oh, welcome to the show, Dana. Oh, damn it. And then they'll be like, let's redo it. Or half of the one, when they've thought about it, like the first half of the interview, they'll call me Dana, but then they'll just revert back to Dana the second half. And they'll be like, did I just call you Dana for half of that? I was like, totally, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I usually get Shithead and James, and I'm totally okay with either one of those two. I don't really care. Like, I just go with
the flow. Do you want me to call you Dr. James?
No.
Dr.
For F's sake, no.
Like, okay.
No.
I literally got interviewed and I was like, oh, is your name Nick? And he's like, well, you can call me Dr. Owsowski. And I was like, well, I'm just never going to say your name because that just sounds weird to say on an interview. But
let me tell you, someone who has a PhD, right? So I'm grossly overqualified for 90% of the jobs out there. I can tell you that if I made someone call me doctor, I would feel like the biggest pretentious ass alive. And so, listen, for those who need that set of respect because they feel like they got a PhD, you should call me something differently. Great for them. I can't personally do that. So, no, please don't.
Okay. James, it is.
And so, listen, Dana. See, like, now in my head, I want to say Dana every time, Dana.
I know. What's the problem too is that once you get, if we hung out together and you got used to calling me Dana, then whenever you meet a Dana, it's like earth shattering. Like, our brain can't have both in our life.
There's a cosmic explosion. Well, one of my really good friends, he actually goes by Dana.
Oh, yeah. What's a boy's name? Yeah, like Dana Carvey?
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that's an, he's not my friend, by the way, but yes, exactly like that. and I can learn from your mistakes.
I totally know things you don't know, James.
Totally. Totally. but I do out-kid you. I have four kids, so...
Oh, you do? Oh, I thought you were going to be like, out-joke me, out-kid me. And I was like, I am funny. That is hard to do. But I get you. You do actually out-kid me.
I do.
Yes, but you didn't have all four of them, so technically I still have a leg up on you.
Can I?
A leg up on you.
Can I tell you a story that will gross you out? Are you ready for the story?
I'm not sure anything you can tell me can gross me out, but I'm down.
All right. So this, when our third kid, this is so gross. So our third kid, we're in labor. And my wife would totally kill me. She would laugh, but she would kill me. A third kid comes out, and the doctor's like, you know, doctor's right in there. I mean, it's like a catcher, like trying to get it all. And as Mary does the final push, liquid shoots out into the doctor's mouth.
Oh, God.
And you just see.
Although it's probably really healthy.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure the doctor didn't feel that way by the response that just happened immediately afterwards of like, take the baby, I need to go, and everything looks fine. So look.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
That's horrible. Well, my water didn't break with my daughter until I was 9.5 centimeters and it burst.
Whoa.
My baby literally like from a movie, like flew out. The nurse was like, the doctor wasn't even there. And this is the first thing that she said. The very first thing that was ever said in the world when my daughter was born is she looked at my husband because it burst like water everywhere. Yeah. And she looked and she said, I guess this was a bad party to wear flip-flops to. And that was the first thing my daughter ever heard. And we were like, okay, I feel like she's going to be a funny person. Like, that's a good thing to come into the world with. So.
That is a great line. All right, now that we've shared disgusting, humorless pregnancy stories, let's back up a little bit. And can you tell me, just so my audience has a bit of a sense, you know, we can run through the whole thing if you like name, where you live, and what you do besides a boss mom.
Name Dana Malstaff. Okay. Although my maiden name is Dana Lee Parker, which everybody tells me sounds like a country singer. So I might have missed my calling by marrying my husband. But I live in Southern California. So I live in San Diego, which I'm originally born in in Southern California in the desert, but moved around forever. So I think I've lived in like 7 or 8 cities, like 22 houses and apartments. I've lived in France for a year. So I've lived all over. But we moved back here when my son was born. I got two littles. So a two-year-old girl, 4-year-old boy. And what else? What else do you want to know?
So like, obviously.
And I love stand-up comedy. I like to laugh. I'm a big jokester. I like to be an adult as little as humanly possible.
I feel like I feel like we're on the dating show right now.
I like outdoor sports.
I got guys with blue eyes who are athletic. And
we are very experiential. I think one of the things that defines me, if you want to talk about me, one of the things that defines me is I'm an experience seeker, not a thrill seeker. I'm an experience seeker. I don't like to jump out of planes, but I like whitewater rafting. I never got to go to camp because my kids got divorced. So I just would go to my dad's in the summer and help him run his auto body shop, which is why I think part of like my entrepreneurial, he airbrushed my name on a desk and then I was his office manager every summer. So I, as an adult, am doing things that kids do. So I've taken archery lessons. We've taken, fencing lessons. We've taken horseback riding lessons. We do rock climbing. We whitewater raft. We've gone scuba diving. We like anything where it's an experience, we love to do the things that are like, we generally don't get each other gifts in my family as me and my spouse, we get each other experiences. So like one day before we had kids, he came home and he's like, okay, what do you want? Do you want an elephant? Do you want dolphins? And then he named one other thing. I was like, ooh, elephants. So we bought tickets to Thailand and we went and rode elephants. So we are very experience driven people, which is infused heavily into my business because that's what we do at my event.
So describe
that. We have literally So like, for instance, the one we're having in October, we have a girl named Katie Speetson from Chicago. She runs a mom's comedy club called Mother Cluckers. And she's coming in and teaching everybody how to tell a joke to grow their business. And then we have stand-up comedy night that night. On the next night, we have karaoke night. We have team-based scavenger hunts throughout the event to help with social share and to build camaraderie and connection. So like those are just three things.
So can I narrow that down? So what you do is work with working moms to learn how to better manage a business under the time constraints that they have. Is that an accurate way to
raise and nurture your business? Raise and nurture your business and your babies at the same time.
I probably could have read your tagline somewhere because I did see that someplace. So, you know, because my wife has her own business. And so I find this would be something that should be really interesting for her.
Tell her to come hang out with us. We have lots of fun.
I think she would have fun.
And it's something we say no judgment, just dance part. That's what we say.
She used to go to clubs and do glow sticks. So, I mean, I think that would give you a sense of her youth.
I totally did that. Yeah.
So tell me, because I think one thing that's always fascinating about people. So you actually have said something that I have, you know, and I am super introspective about my life, my upbringing. You just said something to me that totally resonates with me that I have never connected before in my life. And it's the sense of...
I told you I knew something you didn't know.
Son of a bitch! Is the idea that because your childhood wasn't full of experiences, as an adult, you seek them. And that is something that I do pretty actively. Like I don't vacation, I move, right? Like that's my thing is like, let's go live someplace because that will give us the best experience. And let's go do X. Like we just got back from 6 weeks in Portugal. That was our summer vacation. And, you know, I never connected the fact that I didn't do a fucking thing as a child. We didn't go on any vacation. I think we went on two my whole life. My summers were spent at my house. We didn't have any money. And it actually makes sense now why I totally seek experiences. So thank you for the cheap therapy. That goes back to my other question, though, is, you know, in your house growing up, how old were you when your parents got divorced?
Oh, so my parents got divorced when I was 5. My brother was 10 or 11. And I loved it. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And because my parents were not meant to be together. They met in in the Army, actually, in Morse code class. My dad was the like teacher assistant in the Morse code class, which is interesting because my birthday is May 24th. And I think in like 1875, the guy whose last name's Morse, who invented Morse code, like on my birthday on that year was the very first telegraph that was sent the Morse code. And I called my mom when I found that out. I was like, I randomly was at Barnes and Noble and read this page from this book, like total random. And I was like, oh my gosh, didn't you meet in Morse code class? And she's like, we did. And I was like, this is so serendipitous. It's like weird. But they got a divorce when I was 5, and it was the best thing ever because my mom got together with my stepdad and they had been high school sweethearts. And then rekindled after, you know, reconnecting through a wedding. They had what's called an epistolary relationship, which is a relationship through letters, and then ended up getting back together. They've been married now for over 25 years.
Oh,
and
awesome.
My stepdad is total, total, like, I feel like he's a little bit like Good Will Hunting. Like, he doesn't have a full college degree, but he reads books so voraciously that he knows. He's so smart. He knows. He just has a brain that takes in everything. He understands things that I just don't even know how he gets in, like all aspects of life. He's extremely well rounded and
That's awesome.
Just awesome. Great sales guy. Has started multiple businesses. Has written books. Has like all these things. So I honestly believe that the coupling between my dad, who has a brick and mortar, who's very systematic but a great storyteller, my mom, who is very logical. She's been a registered nurse and an IV therapist, but on the side does illustrating and book writing. And then my stepdad, who is total entrepreneur outside the box, but now he's retired and writes books like science fiction and thriller books. And those three things. Like if my parents had stayed together, I would be living in the desert, you know, probably with like a tattoo of my 6 children's name on them from 5 different husbands, or, you know, and not that the desert is bad, but I think that they didn't love each other. And I think that in a space of like if I had a choice between parents that got divorced so that my mom could meet somebody that loves her, as opposed to my parents staying together so that I could feel like I had this whole family, like I will take the second, that first option all day long. And so for me, it was awesome. Like I always tell people, like, divorce sucks. But if I ever got divorced because my husband and I don't love each other anymore, that's a better choice than for me because of my experience.
And that's an interesting philosophical question, right? Like, is it better for your kids to see you happy and in love, or is it better for your kids to see you committed to something? You know what I mean? Like, that's a...
No, 100% happy and in love. I think it was Brené Brown who did a TED Talk all about, like, what is it? I think it was about vulnerability, but the idea was, what is it that gives people the ability to take risks and be vulnerable, which is what you need to succeed in the world? And it came down to feeling worthy of love was the ultimate one focus point, that if your kids feel worthy of being loved, and how can they feel worthy of being loved if all they see every day is two people who don't love each other? Mm-hmm. And if we feel like I'm not worthy of love because I'm going to hang out with somebody just to, so that we can all be together because we think that's important, like the most important thing for anybody to see is that we are worthy of being loved and that we love each other and we give of each other, not because we're sacrificing something, but because love is selfless. And so, no, I'd say if you don't love each other, get the hell out. Yeah. And find somebody that loves you and lets kids see what that looks like, because then your kids are just going to perpetuate a thing where everybody's unhappy hanging out in a household of unhappiness.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's just, like my wife grew up in this very traditional, strict Catholic family. So divorce is like, what? And I said to her, like, yeah, but if you and I are miserable, not that we are, but I'm saying if we were hypothetically, like why clarify that? Like, why would you want to be with me? And why would I want to be with you to model that to our kids and have them think that that is what life, I mean, my parents were amazing from the standpoint of never really communicating and having physical contact with each other. So like, I did not have the best modeling from a parental or partner perspective. And so I struggle sometimes with proper etiquette, but at least I recognize it, you know, and I try to work on it. So one of the things.
I do think timing though. Oh, I was gonna say, I do think timing though. Like if in any situation, in your business, in your life, in relationships, anything, there is a, you make a decision that says, oh, this isn't working for me, whether it's marriage or a job you have, or business you've started, or you're going to have babies, whatever. Something isn't working for me. The timing does play a factor. You know, like I was 5 and when my parents got divorced, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm going to get this right. My brother was 10. And he has horrible memories of it because he was right at an adolescent age where he was taken away from his dad. And so there's a total, timing is important with everything. Like the if you want something to be successful, understand where the best timing is in there. But yeah, I mean, don't only do things you love. Only be with people you love. Only hang out with people you actually enjoy hanging out with. Otherwise, like, what the heck are we doing?
So does your mom and dad ever talk anymore? Is that not happen?
Oh yeah. They're totally cordial. I mean, they're totally nice to each other. I mean, they don't like, they're so different now because they've been able to bloom into who they really are. They got married when they were 18, you know, and now they're in their 60s. And so they're not even at all the same. I would actually say my dad is probably the most in line with who he's always been. And my mom has done a lot of soul searching, you know, and finding and figuring out. That they're so different now that they're totally nice to each other, but they don't like hang out because they don't have anything in common because they've been, because here's the thing is you couple yourself with things, whether it's a business or a job or, you know, a person or what, a dating a person, whatever, that isn't really in tune for you. It's like a clasp that holds you in and it doesn't allow you to diverge off in other places where you can discover yourself and discover things. I remember in college, my freshman year in college, I dated this hot guy. You know, and I was like, you're hot. So I will totally pretend like I like worldwide wrestling. I don't like it at all. There's nothing. I mean, totally get it that some people love it. It's just not my thing. But I pretended to like it until a certain time when I couldn't be held into that space any longer because the opportunity cost of not actually getting to do things I really enjoyed so that I could hang out and his cuteness just stopped being so cute because it was like, okay, I really just don't want to be sitting here watching this with you. And that's what I think is like when you hang out in
you
spaces.
You vapid, shallow individual.
I know. I'm happier for it.
So, all right. So let's kind of speed up a little bit here. As you know, you're growing up in this teenage household where you're going back and forth. You know, did you ever have a sense of, like, did your dad ever remarry, first of all?
No, he lived with people, like the woman he left my mom for, actually, he lived with for a long time. And then that ended. And then, so there's been two main people he's been with. He's always been a very, he swore he would never get married again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my grandpa was married, gosh, three times. Mm-hmm. And then my dad is that. So my brother is all messed up with, like, I've got to meet the one person and I'm going to, you know, and so he didn't actually get married until he was 40. And they just, he's 42 and they just had their second baby. And I was like, that is way too old to be. I could never, it's mid-30s, let alone, like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. When we had our fourth, I was 41. And I was like,
oh my goodness.
I was like,
bless your heart.
No, I was done. I went to the doctor. Like, I'm out, tap out. Like, I'm not taking a risk. I have no desire. Like, I don't want to work till I'm 80. Like, those are my thinking, my thought points.
Yeah. By the way, my best friend, she said my husband told me that it was, you know, that when we were pregnant. So I said it when we get a vasectomy. Like, she's like, if you're going to share that, we'll just call it a we. It'll be great. Yeah. Now go along to the doctor and make sure we don't have any more babies.
So from a psychological standpoint, in terms of stability,
I don't need the stability. I can make friends anywhere. Exactly. I can, but I will tell you, I've often wondered whether or not I'm very lax about losing friends.
Oh, you're lax.
Like, I'm very lax about relationships.
No, you're lax.
You know, like, oh, I'll just find another one.
No, you're lax. My wife's the same way. She moved a ton because she was a military kid. And so, like,
yeah. You just know there's always another person to hang out with. And so, but I've worked really hard over the last years to make sure I'm cultivating really strong relationships. It's like, it's a priority to me to call friends from college, to call friends from Chicago, and to do kind of an assessment to be like, okay, is this a relationship I really want to keep, or are we both moving away from each other and I'm okay to let that go? I want to make sure it's a very conscious thing, mm-hmm. as opposed to being like, oh, that's okay, I'll just find somebody else.
Because, you know, I had this conversation with, not only my wife, but like many people who've moved a ton. And I keep saying, you are amazing at making friends. Like, that is what you are trained and skilled, like an assassin ninja. You can make friends super easy, right? But the day you get in that U-Haul truck and you cross that state line, you're like, who was that back there I spent 6 weeks with or 6 years with? Who was that again? I don't remember. Like, what was her name? You know, we spent 7 years in Philadelphia before we moved out here. And my wife spent a large amount of time with one of her friends. And I think she's talked to her like five times since we moved here. And I'm like, how do you do that? Like, how do you just basically like pack it up, compartmentalize it, and be like, well, that was 2009 you know, through 2016. That's all right. Let's move on. Like, how do you do that?
Well, and I don't necessarily think it's that. I think it's that we have been in so many situations where you just know you'll be okay. You know, like if you've lived in a house forever and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to live in this new house? Like, how am I going to get by?
Sure.
Or you lose somebody or leave somebody or something. And you're like, how am I ever going to go on? And then over time you recognize, okay, I'm going to make it. Like, I'm going to go on. It's going to be okay. But if you have to do that every 2 years for your whole life, then you just know it's going to be fine. Like, you just know. So you just stop having that space and time where you're like, how am I going to transition? How am I going to transition?
Sure.
Just get smaller and smaller and smaller until you leave. And you're like, okay, I had a week of like figuring stuff out and let's move to the next thing.
Well, your resilience is probably through the roof, right? So like, you have amazing resilience.
Yeah. And this is one of the great things for online entrepreneurship, because I am not married to anything that I do. Mm. And it freaks other people out. You know, people will say it's got to be perfect. And then I spent 6 months making this one thing and now nobody likes it. And I'm like, no. We pull it together. We ask some questions. We get something out there. We test it out. Mm-hmm. You listen to what people say. You tweak it until it works, or until the tweaking is obviously showing it's not going to work. You throw it away and you start something new.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm successful, is because I can do that just like I can do in other parts of my life. And it's, I can rush through things really, really quickly to find, you know, that 80-20 rule, the 20% that's going to work. And then I maximize the heck out of it. and make a lot of money off of it. And so, yeah, not being married to my content is just as important, I think, as being able to cultivate really new relationships and then not being hurt if the relationships don't mm-hmm. like come to fruition in the way that I hoped.
So how does that, you know, I mean, it sounds like you have a really strong relationship with your husband. So is that one of those things because of, because he moved, you guys moved a lot together, it sounded like, as well. Like you said, you moved to Ohio, someplace else, and then Southern California. Is that right? Did I understand that right?
Yeah. So we got met in Chicago because he's from Illinois. We moved to
First of all, how Columbus, great is Chicago? Ohio. I lived in Chicago as well for a time.
I love it. It's my home. Like it's my, like I don't like the winters and the things. Actually, I don't even mind the winters. It's just with kids. Like if my kids are like 9 and 10, I'm like, maybe we could move back. But my mom and stepdad are here and I really am very close with them. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not like, oh, let's move to San Diego. It's not like being like, let's move to the middle of nowhere. So, he's totally okay. But this is, I mean, there's a couple things. One, I have dated a lot. so I know my husband's a pretty good find. I mean, so that's right off the bat, just like process of elimination. I know he's a pretty good find. Two, I think he's hot without his pants on. I think that whenever you should meet somebody that even if you're really mad at the person, you still want to see them naked. Like that's a good sign because the people that you're like, I'm not massively attractive, but their personality is so great. And then they became attractive. Yeah. I've done that before. And then when they aren't so nice and aren't so great, they're not attractive. And then you have a not so nice, not so great, not attractive person, which does not end in happy marriages.
Brutal.
I know, but it's so true. It's so true. But there's somebody out there that thinks they're hot. And when they're mad at them, is still going to think they're hot. Like it's not just because they're not for me, they're not for anybody. Yeah. Like everybody's got to fit. And you've got to, like my mom used to say, you've got to smell the flowers before you can find the one that's like the right one for you. But then she would say, don't pick the flowers. Just smell the flowers, Dana. It's one of my mom's other like most fun phrases was that only whores stay out past midnight, which I think probably turns out to be relatively true once in college. So, but with my husband,
God, man, your mom would have hated me then.
No, my brother was, like total crazy party person out. I think that's why she came up with that phrase once it awesome. Got to my high school years. But, my husband and I are, here's the thing. We have tons of inside jokes together. And I've discovered the one or two things that I knew to me from my family upbringing were super important. So my family, we sing a lot. Like we turn things into songs. We speak things into songs. We like, you know, just have fun with singing. We make up new words to stuff. We like road trips where we're like coming up with fun, creative things. We're very much a think tank. And that's how I've built my business. Like the Boss Moms group really has grown to 20,000, honestly, because I've made it a think tank where people feel like they can ask questions and get that kind of like think tanky support. And my husband's awesome. He'll come down and he'll like make up a song, like the lyrics, like every birthday and every Mother's Day, my husband handwrites me a totally ugly card with a handwritten hilarious poem in it. That's awesome. It's my favorite thing ever. He comes down and he makes up new words to songs. Every day he comes home and he's like, I know how we're going to make $1 million. And he has some ridiculous idea. And we know that at some point, one of those ideas is going to be ridiculously brilliant and it's going to make us $1 million. But that's what I knew was the thing.
Which bar did you meet him at in Chicago? I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know if that's true or not.
Terrible story. No, I met him at a going away party. He had dated one of my friends and he came highly recommended. So he was actually just my Sunday Funday friend for a summer. Yeah. And then the winter came and I decided to go get an actual boyfriend. And then when that ended, he like 6 months later, you know, when it became summer again, he was like, I don't want you to go date other people. And so he took me to a Cubs game and for sushi for our very first date. And we've been dating ever since. And that was, let's see, that'll be 10 years this year. Like right now it's 10 years. And then our 7-year wedding anniversary is in September. November. That's terrible. My son's birthday is in September. We were married in November.
I just had my 10-year anniversary. So let me also, because we're sharing stories, right? So let me tell you how I met my wife, because you will probably, if you don't have it depends on, poop your pants. And so...
you're not supposed supposed to preface with how funny a joke is. You're supposed to set really low expectations. So I'm like really excited once you tell the story.
Well, I mean, maybe I don't know if it's any humor. Okay. Maybe you'll do like a in your throat, but I don't know. So we'll see.
that kind of.
Yeah. So I was living in Australia and I had just moved there. And so I'd lived in Japan for a year and I came back. And I was living with my mom at my early 30s, which is, you know, great for dating, first of all. But second of all, I was, for some reason in my mind, I thought I had to marry a Catholic girl. Like, and I didn't even grow up Catholic. Like, I grew up in a Catholic house, but we didn't actually go to church because my mom said she had an issue with the Pope. Now, when I ask her what the issue is, and I ask her if she brought it up with the Pope, that was a different conversation. So...
And that would have probably been John Paul II. He's the nicest pope ever.
I don't know. The one now is pretty good. So for some reason, I decided to join CatholicMatch.com. And I thought...
There's a thing called CatholicMatch.com?
Bet your ass there is. And so...
And I'm Catholic. I didn't even know.
Yeah. You know, and so I thought, all right, well, I'll meet a good Catholic girl. And they ask you... these questions, like, you know, seven questions, whatever the seven tenets of Catholicism are. I don't actually know them, but two of them was, have you ever had premarital sex? And do you believe in condoms or prophylactics, whatever? And I said, yes and yes, right? Because I didn't want to be...
And they were like, they kicked you off the site.
They're like,
we have no matches for you. You're going to hell.
No, there was smoke coming from the machine at the same time. So I'm not sure what that meant. But so with any of these dating sites, I don't know if you ever did a dating site or not, but it's an automatic subscription, right? Like every month, automatic, you know. So I moved to Australia and I started dating this girl there. And she was amazing. She was awesome. But I was 32, and she was 22. Now, in Australia, that's not really a big deal. Now, in America, that's like perving. But in Australia...
I don't think so. I think if you didn't grow up watching the same cartoons, that there's a tough way to relate there.
And I don't think we did, but that's a whole other conversation. But she was really awesome. But in my head, being American, I'm like, well, I never can marry this girl because she's 22, and I want to have kids. And if I'm her, I want to wait at least 8 years. And I don't want to have kids when I'm 40. So like, you know, but we hung out and it was fun. And so one day I'm at the computer and you get this email and it says, oh, your matches. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I see this girl in the workout outfit. And I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I'm sure you're wondering why. I said, oh, I see you do triathlons. That's great. So do I. I'm sure you're wondering why a guy in Australia is emailing you. Well, I'm an American. I moved here, but don't worry. I'm canceling my subscription. Best of luck to you. And she emailed me back and she was like, why would a girl like me be into a guy like you who's not a 7 out of 7? My profile says 7 out of 7. And I was like, oh, snap, you didn't just do that, did you? And so like, I wrote back to her and I was very terse. And I was like, what I don't like about Catholicism is the hypocrisy that goes on, that people who judge you for what you are not or are versus accepting you for the path that you've taken, right? So some sort of like philosophical, like, don't be a hypocrite. This is why Catholicism is broken.
Right.
And she emailed me back.
Well, which is totally an overarching assumption about Catholics, but yes.
Yes, totally. But the ones I engaged with, yes. So she sent an email back. Like, I really appreciate it. So anyhow, so all right, it was a nice email. So we go back and forth and I said, listen, I'm dating this girl. I want to break up with her before you and I start chatting back and forth because I want to be respectful of her. And, you know, I'm really interested in you because you're my age and you're cute. So I'm like, let's see where this goes. Now, she's in St. Louis. I'm in Australia, Perth, never going to go anywhere, probably. So 3 weeks later, chatting every morning and every night because we're about 12 hours apart, I started telling a story about, I went to the University of Dayton, so in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and she went to Notre Dame. And I said to her, like, oh, yeah, well, she goes, do you have a friend named Gus? I'm like, and Gus was my housemate. And I was like, how do you know Gus? And she goes, well, in 1998, at a water polo tournament in the spring, because she played water polo as well, and I played water polo. And she said, like, you know, at a tournament, I kissed a guy at a party. And she was not a big drinker, not even close to a floozy either. Like, she would have been boring.
I love your word choice.
Yeah. She would have been boring for me, right? And so I said to her, who was the guy? She's like, I don't know. I can't remember his name. And I said, well, what did he look like? You know, blah, blah, blah. She's like, well,
it was you.
and the week afterwards, she's like, he drove out to see me in St. Louis. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, what did he look like? Now, the caveat is when I moved to Australia, they stopped calling me Jim and they started calling me James. You're going to be a professor. We got to call you James. All right, fine, okay. So, anyhow, so back and forth in this conversation, who was the guy? What did he look like? Did he have a dog? What kind of car was it? And she was like, it was a blue Ford. I'm like, you're in the fucking Midwest. Who doesn't have a blue Ford? Like, could you narrow that down for me? Yeah, right? Like, could you narrow that down for me? She's like, I don't know. So anyhow, so she's like, I got to go. I'm like, all right, I got to go. So I'm on the bus home and she sends me a text and she's like, hey, go check your email. So I run home, grab my computer, go to the local internet cafe, open it up. And the subject line says, mystery solved. So I scroll down, and it's my arm around her in 1998. And I was the guy who made out with her and drove to St. Louis the weekend after to hang out with her.
How did you not remember driving to St. Louis? How would you not, like, that sounds like something I did.
Well, that's a great question. Because I said it to my mom. She goes, I'm not surprised. You drank a lot then. So, like.
My goodness.
So we had met 8 years before. Easter weekend, because the tournament was Easter weekend. We reconnected again Easter weekend 8 years later and talked for like two and a half.
Way to go, CatholicMatch.com.
Yeah. So, and at this time, I had already bought tickets to go see her in the States before any of this came out. So as soon as this came out, I was like, oh, well, we're going to get married, right? Because that's just...
Well, she obviously thought you were hot, which proves my point, by the way. Thank you very much.
So anyhow, I need to practice. That story wasn't told very well. I may have set the bar too high. Sorry.
No, I feel like you match, like CatholicMatch.com should like...
I know.
You know, be like, see, God is watching.
I sent them the story and I got no feedback. I'm like, why am I not on the front page?
That's because the beginning of it is prefaced with her being a floozy.
No, like, not a floozy. Not a floozy. All right. So anyhow. All right. So totally off topic, Dana.
Which, by the way, though, part of why I didn't become Catholic until I was nine or 10. We weren't religious. My stepdad was Catholic. And I actually got to sing for John Paul II because I sang. And my choir in Corpus Christi was one of 15 that was chosen to go to Colorado and sing for World Youth Day in 94, 96, yeah. Something like that. And but my stepdad has such a fantastic way of talking about Catholicism and religion and it as a practice.
So do you practice?
Not just like, yeah, like how you get good at learning French or playing piano is the same thing you do about learning and understanding how to be giving, how to be loving, how to use the stories to like it's just a really beautiful way that he talks about it. Mm-hmm. That's very inclusive, very loving, isn't about the rules, but is about the understanding of things and how we integrate that into our life that really drew me to that particular religion.
So do you still practice then?
We do. So, although it's funny, my son was baptized when he was 6 days old and my daughter is 2 and she still hasn't been baptized because it was like we had just moved in house and we say that she might be possessed by the devil and if we don't get her baptized soon, that's why she's such a pain in the butt.
So no, that's a really interesting thing to me, right? Because I'm not anti-religion. My wife is super Catholic and having lived around the world, I always kind of come to this conclusion of every religion has the same basic tenets. Be good to other people. Don't kill someone. Don't rape your neighbor. You know, like treat people with respect. The bar is not that high at the end of the day. Like just don't be an asshole. And so for me, I've always struggled with Catholicism as I've gotten older where she's like, nope, you know, all of our kids are baptized. They're all going through communion. They're all blah, 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 blah. So in San Diego, which by the way, the guy who married us is in San Diego. Oh, he's in Arizona now. Damn it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. In San Diego, it's so liberal. Like, how do you practice Catholicism in a way that aligns with kind of this liberal, I guess, atmosphere?
Well, true. Although I'll say that's a sweeping generalization. We have actually a very high Catholic population. Some of which is because we have a high Hispanic population, and that's a very very common religion in Hispanics, but Catholicism is actually very prominent in this space. But I mean, you're talking about, I don't know, what is there, like 8 million people or something like that in San Diego? Like to say, how is it hard to be one thing because everybody else is liberal? I mean, that's totally sweeping. Like mm-hmm. not 100% of people here are liberal. There's maybe 60% of people, and it's not hard at all. You just find, just like anything else in your life, like we were talking about at the beginning, I find the people that believe the things that I believe. Mm-hmm. But I also surround myself with, like, my best friend is a Canadian liberal. Like if she could make out with Bernie Sanders, she would, so she's all those things. Like, and we constantly get in arguments about stuff all the time. And I love it because it challenges me to confirm and gain clarity on what I'm willing to fight for. So I like being around people that don't always believe the things I believe, but I don't surround myself with people, like you said, who judge me for the things that I believe. Because in that sense of being like, oh gosh, how could you be Catholic when, you know, the A, B, and C? And it's like, well, I love what I believe. Like I have a very strong relationship with Mary. Like I like the way that I'm actually very traditionalist. Like I think there's absolute beauty coming in and having a standard process and habitual methodology to how we have church and how we, and the sacredness of it. Like I really
my wife would love you.
Well, and like in Dogma, the movie, in the 90s, where they have like Buddy Christ and he's like, hey, and you know, like I love that there is a place that is upheld by this sacred aspect. And sacred is actually my word of the year for my business, which is, and my grandpa just passed away and he had a military funeral. They spent 9 minutes folding a flag. And some, like when you have things that hold space and honor with tradition, I think that we should at least have something once a week that brings us back to that space, that familiarity and just being lax with each other and truncating all our words. So we're not even using full words anymore in our vocabulary, that there is a lack of respect that happens there that we think means we're being familiar and friendly. And it's just the hip thing to do. But I think going into a space that creates honor through, you know, giving things the time that they need, honoring them, dissecting them, spending time in them, and really thinking about who we are and what we are and what the person is saying for the homily that week and how that pertains to us. I think it's just like when somebody gets a life coach or a business coach or learns, you know, a language or an instrument, like that practice to me is a really important part of me making sure that my moral compass stays in the right direction. So I don't mind the tradition at all. I like the tradition. I don't think there's enough tradition in our families and in our lives.
So, and I don't want you to think, by the way, and I apologize if it came across that way, it's like I was attacking you because of...
Oh, I feel totally attacked, James. No, I don't feel attacked at all. That's why I love these conversations, because it helps me go, oh, this is what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I actually, my parents are our godparents because I have so few Catholic friends that we're like, guys, you're the only people we know that are Catholic. Can you just be our godparents?
So, like... So I say, like, we go to church, right? And so I don't belittle it. I think what I always struggle with is, like, for example, the homily. Traditional Catholic homily, I feel like, totally misses the mark on family. Totally misses the mark on, like, what's going on in the world in terms of our day-to-day life. Totally agree with
that. It's just like the podcast, someone listening to your podcast versus somebody else's podcast.
Yeah, you're right.
That's why I say test out your churches. Don't go to no matter what religion you are, don't go to the place that's closest to you. Test out all of them and see which one speaks to you because they are run by people. Like it's, you know, the priests or the pastors, whoever it is. We've gone to places where we're like, ooh, that just did not resonate with me. It just didn't sit with me. And then you go to places where you're like, oh my gosh, yes. Like that was a gem and that was genius. And the same thing with podcasts and books you read and meetups you go to and conferences you attend.
You're right.
And people you date. Like it's run by people. So test out it until you find the one who deciphers the reading into a homily that's actually meaningful for you.
Did you, when you went to church, did you ever go to the UC San Diego one? No, USD. Like, did you ever have a priest that was black?
Yeah. That seems like a completely random question.
No, because John Paul, the guy who married us, is a black Catholic priest, which there's not that many of them. And so that's why he had his amazing voice and amazing homily when he was in, and he worked at UCSD. Is that right?
USC is probably it, because USC is the one on the hill that is a Catholic.
He lived there, but he actually worked.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's beautiful. It's got these benches on the sides. Just visually, it's a really beautiful place. And they usually go to the nighttime mass on Sundays. Yeah. That's when all the students go, and they have a choir that's really beautiful.
We've got
the mission. I say test it out. Proximity, just like living in neighborhoods and then hoping that the people that decide to move next to you, like that's why I like things like thematch.com and online communities, because I'm not going to leave to chance that my neighbor is meant to be my best friend. Like I'm going to go out and, or that the church I move next to is meant to be my church or the restaurant next to me has to be my favorite watering hole. I told you I'm an experienced person. Let's go out and test so that I'm really confident at the place that we land is the place that we want.
All right. So I only have you for a few more minutes. I really appreciate this honest conversation with religion. You know, it's something that I personally struggle with. You know, you used the word earlier about like going to church creates morals, but I always go back to, I've lived all over the world and everyone has the same morals. Like, Is church used as a way to create the framework? I feel like it is, versus the parents are the tools to teach their kids that. And I don't want to belittle.
100%. Yeah. 100. You're totally right. But it comes to the same thing as learning anything. The purpose of church is we're going to teach you life skills, like the way you should live as a person. So the mission of going to church every day is to know those things more and to know like what in that particular religion you want to know. Just like, okay, well, now I'm going to take you to school and they're going to teach you how to write and how to draw circles and how to spell your name. And then you go over here and we're going to teach you how to swim. And so, so you know, for me, I've got all these other things that I'm teaching my kids and I'm going to take them to church to help me help. I have a client who has the intentional bookshelves and it's all about how to teach your kids about your life, like life values and morals through books so that you don't have to do it all by yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is, it's something that I believe. So in any aspect of my life, so I'm going to go to the place that can help me hone in on that skill and make that a foundational part for my kids. But then absolutely 100%. It's when you come home and you go to church every day. And if you come home and you're a total jerk face, then, church didn't do you much good.
That word, by the way, jerk face.
Me too. One of my favorites.
All right. Listen, I only have a few minutes. So can we please do a little segment that I have called Let's Get Authentic. And then let's talk about Boss Mom for the last 5 or 10 minutes and just kind of dive into that a little bit,
Can we be any more authentic than we've actually been? I don't think I've ever had these conversations on any interview. So hopefully I have no idea what that means for my audience. If they're going to be like, Dana, we no longer like you.
All right. So these are 5 or 6 questions. And really these questions are specifically predicated on the book that I have coming out in the spring. And I started asking these questions recently. I used to have a section or a part called Fast Five. And I'd ask 5 random questions, which were kind of fun, but I'm really into this concept of authenticity and what does that mean for leadership and what does that mean for you as an individual? So, all right. My God. Okay.
Put your game face on.
Yeah. All right. Well, no, it's because I just finished my second Doers and Water. So I'm just trying to finish.
Because it's nighttime for you. I had my coffee.
Now, if we were doing listen, I know there's Bailey's in there, but we don't need to talk about that. All right. So
actually, no, I'm doing the whole 30. So I haven't drank all month and I haven't had any grains, dairy, or legumes.
Which is such a stupid word. Just call them beans. Anyhow.
It's so weird.
All right. So question one, doing this research that I did for this book, one of the big things that really came out was this idea of self-awareness. So how do you, Dana, practice self-awareness?
I practice self-awareness by, one, asking questions of people to understand myself, right? So things where I can be more self-aware by listening to what other people see about me. Two, every single day I assess like what's working, what's not working. And honestly, number three, I have a life coach currently. I normally have a business coach, but there's a lot going on in my life. So I have a life coach that I ask to challenge me about why I make the decisions I make. But I think self-awareness is a lot to do with the decisions you make. And the more I can question and challenge the decisions I make that turn into the reactions that I have, help me to understand more of who I am and why I do what I do so that I can then be conscious of it and make changes where needed.
Did you see, it's something I've actually, I'm looking to start doing in the next couple, like in the next month, I've been speaking to somebody. Did you see a difference in the way that you reacted once you started to get like a business / life coach? Like just in everything in general, like the way you package yourself, the business, your reactions, like, did you need that as a framework to support you?
I'm not sure it's a framework to support me. I'm an idea bouncer offerer. And so I need somebody to hold me accountable for things because I'll get excited about stuff and then I'll move on to the next thing and get excited and move on to the next thing. So for me in business, I say, okay, this is what I want to do. We bounce off ideas. They say, do this. And I go, okay. And I felt like I knew what those things were, but yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer that all I need is one tiny nugget to change my life. Like I don't need you to come at me with a billion awesome things. I just need to find the one thing that's going to change my life. Mm. And so if I can just hone in on that one thing when we have a conversation and I can grasp on, like hold on to it and just go with it, then I think it could be really, really valuable. So I'm not sure it's a framework that they give me. I think that it's a sounding board. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an accountability partner where I can't forget that thing's important to me because I told somebody and I'm going to have to come back the next week and tell them what happened about it.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Question two, you know, integrity is a really important part in defining who you are. And there's the moral integrity, which we've just talked about, and I love the fact that you are passionate and you speak about it with conviction. And then there's the behavioral integrity. So putting the moral one aside, authentic leaders that I spoke with and that I believe in and would follow really had this sense of behavioral integrity. So how do you practice behavioral integrity?
Consistency, I would say. I mean, behavioral integrity is that people get what they expect. They kind of know who I am. I don't think anybody, when you talk about authenticity, a lot of people tell me like, Dana, you're so real. And part of that is because I don't have the energy to be somebody that I'm not.
I know,
like
right?
I've already got too many things in my life. It's too exhausting to try and be something else. But I'm consistent. I had somebody recently ask, they were like, do you think you should dress up to go to work even if you work at home? And I said that I think you should dress for whatever your brand, you know, says mm-hmm. about you. So if you've created a brand in your business and in your life that says, you know, I'm the woman that's always wearing yoga pants and I've got my hair up, but I'm getting things done, then wear yoga pants, put your hair up and get things done. But have that consistency, because then people, to me, integrity is almost mutually inclusive mm-hmm. of consistency, because yeah. integrity means I know what to expect from you and you're going to deliver what I expect. And so if you have, that means you have to set the right expectations and you deliver on those expectations. And behaviorally, I do that by being consistent about mm-hmm. what I do. And if I have those, that sort of consciousness about myself, if I see those outliers of outbursts of something, that's when I go to my coach or go to my friend or go wherever you go and go, this feels like it's not me. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like it's not what I would normally do. Like, let's talk about why that might be. Like, what could I do or what's happening in my life so that I'm not disrupting that behavioral integrity?
So it sounds like you have a feedback loop that allows you to stay focused and consistent and deliver on the things that you promise you're going to deliver on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big, like I said, a sounding board. I'm mm-hmm. huge on a sounding board. So everything has to be batted up with somebody. I'm a textbook extrovert, which means I am a speak to think person. So I have to talk it out to get my best ideas. Mm-hmm. Like, my husband's an introvert, so he needs to think it out to have his best ideas. He's a think to speak person. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like I need people in my life to get my energy, but I also need people in my life to talk things out for me to have my realizations. I don't have aha moments in my brain. Mm-hmm. I have them when I talk it out.
Okay. Question three. One, you know, the idea of compassion to me is really important in leadership. I think, you know, it's easier for women for sure than men. So, on the whole, and again, you've called me out on this a couple of times. It is a generalization. Totally own it.
I know you love those sweeping generalizations.
Totally own it. Yeah, but most of my generalizations come from experience of just dealing with a lot of people. Now, I recognize most of our generalizations, and not everyone fits into a nice little neat box.
Sure.
But there are a percentage of people that do. And men generally are not as strong in compassion as women. I just think that that's for whatever reason. And you see that in business all the time. And the bigger the company, the more likely that's going to be as people try to move up and overly competitive.
Oh, I could tell you, if you'd like to know, I could tell you exactly why that is.
Why?
I have a theory. James.
Bring it.
Well, way back in the day, the men had to leave and go hunting. They couldn't be compassionate or miss, you know, whoever was gone or those kinds of things. They had to go out and be focused on the prize so they could feed everybody, you know, and make sure they don't get eaten. So they've got to be focused and pay attention. That's why guys are good at focusing on one thing and they're okay with compartmentalizing. And then women have to be compassionate because we have to make sure our children don't run off and get eaten. So ultimately it comes down to not getting eaten. That's my theory.
Okay, so then how do you practice your kids not getting eaten? No, how do you practice compassion then? Like, what do you do?
Harnesses. I put them in harnesses.
No. I lock them
in closets.
I chain them to the fence. And I say, I'm hungry and I'm going to eat this animal and my kids are the bait. So
they are the bait. Very Jurassic Park of you.
Yeah. Now, how do you practice compassion? Because, you know, you're an entrepreneur. How do you practice compassion?
I would say I'm going to throw out your words with other words because it's my favorite thing to do. I would say listening. Mm. To me, the only way you can create compassion and the next level up from compassion is empathy. So compassion is, I feel for you. And empathy is I feel with you, right? So to create compassion, I have to understand people because I can't have compassion on the surface. Compassion is not a surface word. So if I am compassionate for somebody, that means I know enough about them to feel for them. Mm-hmm. And then if I really dig deep and I know enough about them and I maybe can start seeing how we share experiences, then I can feel with them. So to me, listening, if I'm not listening to people, then there's no way for me to be compassionate. There are those things where that it's so generally universally sad that there's compassion there. And that's why, you know, so many videos are the ones with the music and they want you to listen enough to what their story is to form compassion for it. So I find listening is the best way to be compassionate.
All right. Question four. Jesus, man, we're not even on question five yet. All right. Question four. you're awesome at this. So I think this is something that not everyone has a natural ability to do. And that is to relate with people where they're at. So is there anything you do when you meet new people that helps you relate with them right away?
Yeah, two things. One is I always assume positive intent. So no matter who I'm meeting, I assume that they're never doing something to me. They're just living their own life and we bump into each other in different ways of our beliefs, our thoughts, our ideas, our actions, those kinds of things. So coming in with assuming positive intent allows me to take away any prejudgments. And then I do think that assuming that everybody has value, that way we can listen and search for where that value is to help them in the ways they need to be helped, really helps me strip away my desire to teach them something. And it allows me to listen better so I can discover where that value is so that we can maximize that value and find that gift and really maximize that gift so that it doesn't just become me going. There was somebody that went to a conference and they were like, Dana, I don't know what to do because I went up to so-and-so and they said, what you need is YouTube videos. And I went to so-and-so and they said, what you need is email marketing. I went to so-and-so and they're like, what you need is a podcast because that was their way that they all made money and that was what they all taught. But none of them listened to what her business was and what she needed to be able to say, you're not at any of these places. You need to start this place here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I can help get people where they're going by understanding more of where they are and taking away those preconceived notions about things. But I also think I'm a massively pragmatic brain. Like I'm a process oriented. I think through things. I'm very logical about, I got that from my mom, about the process of things. So I'm really good at being able to think through what the process is, like visually in my brain, I can see it. Mm-hmm. And when someone talks to me, I can almost place them in the spot that says, okay, this is where you are in the spectrum of this. Let's start here.
That's awesome. All right. Final question. The other thing that's really I found relevant was this idea of having a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. So, you know, if you're familiar with Carol Dweck, she's someone that wrote the, you know, the mindset and colon something, something, something. Can't remember the rest of the name of the book. I believe that might be the technical name, but, you know, don't hold me to that.
No, I love it. You're just like me in that way. I'm like that person that wrote the thing.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. Oh, God. I'm happy I remember your name at this point. And so one of the things I think is really fascinating is that these leaders that I spoke with almost bookended their life. And what I mean by that is that they had this crucible, right? This crucible is this moment that defines them, good or bad crucible, whatever that is. But that crucible drove their desire to learn. They had a growth mindset to grow their self-awareness, compassion, integrity, and relatableness with those around them. So what do you do to continue your learning and growth?
Well, first off, I think curiosity is the cornerstone of everything. I think there's a lot of quotes out there that's like, if you are curious, then you are constantly growing and there's happiness in curiosity.
I thought that killed the cat.
Well, I guess it depends if you're a cat person. Yeah.
That's my mom said to me all the time, curiosity killed the cat. Is that, I guess PETA would be best for me.
It's an interesting phrasing though, although I guess cats have 9 lives, so I suppose killing a cat doesn't have to be that bad. Yeah. I think that's when parents tell you to like get out of the cupboards and stop playing with things. I think curiosity is the because the focus isn't on results. The focus is on discovery.
Totally.
And I love curiosity because for me, like I said, I'm experiential. So for me, it is not in what I do and what I succeed in and what I conquer. Like for me, it is in what I discover and what I explore. Mm-hmm. And so that mindset means that I just want to take everything in. Everything becomes a learning experience. And that's why I'm such a good email marketer, because I'll go to I went to Pilates class and I'm doing the Pilates and the woman says, I don't want your momentum. I want your control, because in Pilates, you need to go slower, but you want to use your core. Or, you know, it made sense in the context. And I ran home and I wrote an email that was called, I don't want your momentum. I want your control. And it was all about getting the core parts of your business like in tune. Otherwise you're going to create momentum, but not actually grow anything. And that one has like by far it's in my organic nurturing system and it gets open all the time and people get responses back and I love it. So me being able to, because I'm curious and want to see the correlations in everything, I want to learn as much as I can inside of business and outside of business and in all aspects of life. Cause to me, everything is relatable. And the more I can bring in, the more I have in my toolkit to play with, and the more I can play, the more fun I have.
Dana, thanks for playing. Let's get authentic. I have you just for a few minutes. So can you please tell me where this concept of boss mom came from?
Yes. So I've always wanted to write a book. I was a broadcast journalism major. My family does a lot of writing. So I knew I wanted to write a book. I had dabbled in like writing something about business. I went to Hal Elrod's Best Year Ever Blueprint, I think it's called. And he met some people there that I was invited to a mastermind. Azul Taronis was the guy who was in the group that's like, I'm a book coach. If anybody wants to write a book, I said, yes. We started mapping it out. And what it turned out I wanted to write about was the guilt of not wanting to be a stay-at-home mom. And the idea that I wanted to feel really good about having a business and having babies and not feel bad about it. And what my beliefs about what that meant and how to actually do it. And so I started writing this book and basically went out to communities and was like, what do you guys think? And everybody's like, oh my God, this is a great idea. When are you going to write it? And then we went out and brainstormed ideas. And Boss Mom was actually my least favorite. And it was actually Mom Boss was the one that we had brainstormed out, which turned out to be a porn site. So I just inverted it and was like, well, let's do Boss Mom. And then that one was great. And since then, I think we've taken
Google
down
Mom Boss.
Trademarks and things. Yeah. So it's so funny though, because you'd think that everybody would have come back, but nobody did. Like I've only had one person who we sent a cease and desist to, cause I have trademarks and a lot, like not in porn for Boss Mom, but in a lot of other things. I don't even know if there's a trademark for that, but nobody does, because I've become so much of a space of, you know, for visibility and everything for this brand that it's a really, really strong brand. But yeah, I just listened to the audience. They said, "Ooh, we love this." Mm-hmm. And that's how it became a thing.
So how would you describe your business?
awesome. I don't know what, I'm not sure what you're looking for there. Yeah.
No, awesome works. I mean, I think that's great. What do you, I mean, if I was to say to you, Dana, like, how can you help me? Right? Would it be read my book, follow my blog? Like, how would you help me if gotcha. I was a woman and had kids?
I usually tell people first to join our Facebook community because it's. I was just looking at the analytics on Facebook because you can do that now. We have over 20,000, just over 20,000 members.
That's awesome.
15,000 of them are active on a monthly basis. Mm. Like, that's crazy. We just put out a course on how to grow your own Facebook group because all my corporate background on healthy culture and cultures of wellness and behavioral modification and those kinds of things that were my corporate side, I applied all of those to how I built my team and the community. And it's like, it's just a crazy, awesome think tank of fantasticness is basically. So I generally push people to the Facebook group. And then we have a bunch of resources on how to manage your time, your business, grow your business, scale your business, start things, create programs, you know, internet marketing, all that kind of stuff.
You keep saying we. Who's we?
Me and my team. I like to use an inclusive
Who's your tone. Team? Like what?
I have 12 people on my team.
So this is what I'm trying to understand. It's like your business is called Boss Mom. And how do you help people? Like, do you help moms who want to be an entrepreneur how to set up their business and grow it? I mean, is that the primary?
No, I don't help moms set up their businesses.
Sorry, set up.
I help women grow their businesses. Okay. So generally, I don't help you brainstorm what your business is. We get people once they've started a business. Sure. And they don't understand how to market it, how to gain visibility for it, how to get people to actually buy things, how to decide what they're selling, all of that. So generally people come to us and say, oh, I want to do this, or I've started doing this. And the women who feel stagnant or don't know how to grow or started something and nobody's showing up, people say, oh, well, they said if I build it, they will come. And I was like, no, if you build it and give really freaking good directions, then they'll come. The direction part, we kind of seem to forget. Yeah. So I think that, honestly though, any woman who just wants to do things outside of being a parent and doesn't want to feel bad about that has a space in our community. That's why I guide them to the Facebook group because it's the most general of the spaces. And then from there, we say, okay, go to boss-mom.com and go look, and you can listen to the Boss Mom podcast. You can go join up some of our other programs that help you grow your business. We do it by starting, growing and scaling are the three sort of phases in your business that we work through. And then we have various like group programs and events. And, you know, I do 1-day workshops around the United States and do, you know, we have our Boss Mom retreat. That's a large event and all that kind of stuff. So there's all sorts of things that we do, but ultimately it's about helping women first just say, not feel bad, to not feel guilty about the fact that they want to do things outside of being a parent. And that it's not bad to not want to be a stay-at-home mom. And that I believe that it's not about showing, like, sacrificing our life for our kids, but it's about showing our kids what a good life lived looks like and being that role model for them. And that you should find the things that you love to do to show your kids that doing things that you love to do not only makes you happier, but is financially viable.
I think that's all. I mean, So that's, first of all, I think that's totally respectable. And my wife is a stay-at-home mom / business owner. I do think she's, you know, early on you said like, first get it done and then tweak it as you go. You know, my wife's philosophy is it's got to be right, then go. And I'm like, no, just get it done and move on. Like, sort it out later. So, but that's part of her perfectionist traits. Why do you think your message, I mean, you're not the first person to have this struggle. So why do you think your message is resonating so amazingly?
There's a couple things. One, this is going to sound like total jerk face thing to say, but me, I think some of it's me, because I'm energetic. I'm happy. I do not let negative tone come into my group or my space at all. We don't, talk crap about people. We don't judge people. I say we don't have to have everything in common to have common ground and create spaces where we only have conversations about things we have common ground in. And you can have other outside discussions. So I catch a lot of flack because I don't let political, religion, like I just did a video about what happened, you know, in Charlottesville, in my, this is when we're recording this, in, you know, in my group, because we deleted all the comments that people had voicing their opinions about it, because I keep a really, really safe space. So I think people see that I am take it very seriously, mm-hmm. that I am not, I'm not just growing a group online to make money. I'm actually creating a culture and a, community. And a community.
Yeah.
And everybody has a role and everybody has a place and everybody can contribute and connect. So I'm not the head of something. I'm a very King Arthur round table kind of gal. And I think that really resonates with people. And I'm just so freaking honest about stuff that, and I'm fun about like topics that I think people take way too seriously. Mm-hmm. That I think people like that it's fun. Like it, I, like they tell me like, Danny, you make it seem like it's possible without pretending like it, that it's easy.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question. I'll let you run. Obviously
so many questions, James.
Sorry.
I've run out of coffee. We've been talking for so long.
Last question, Dana, you know, and I think this probably puts the capstone on our conversation. How do you define happiness?
Oh my God. You end with like the largest question ever. I define happiness the same way I would tell people I define success, which is that I actually like getting up in the morning. Mm-hmm. If I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I would like to go back to bed because this dream was so much better. Well, that, if I'm dreaming about The Flash, then I do want to go back to bed. But in most cases, like success to me is I wake up and I go, ooh, what's going to happen today? Or, ooh, I know what's going to happen today and that's going to be fun.
But it sounds like you're defining success and happiness as the same. Is that the same?
Absolutely.
Really?
100%. Yeah, because what is success? Like success is I'm making so much money. I'm doing so, like those are the smart goals that I create. Mm. But success and happiness to me is that I actually enjoy living. Because I could have nothing or everything. And if I don't give a crap about getting up in the morning and enjoying my day, then what kind of success is that? So yeah, success and happiness to me are kind of mutually inclusive things. I can't have success without happiness and I can't have happiness without some kind of success. And success is just such a subjective term, just like happiness. You know, I've got women that are like, I don't need to build an empire, Dana. I just want to have vacation money or I just need to feel value for myself that I'm creating something. And we decide what success looks like. And it's very different for everybody, which is why I don't do marketing that says start a six-figure business because every mom should have a six-figure business because I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think success is whatever we want. But the way you know you've got some form of success or that you're on the road to the kind of success that you want, whatever that defined is, and that you're happy is that you actually enjoy being alive in your own life and not wishing you were in somebody else's life, doing something else, being somewhere else with different people.
I think that is awesome. And so I was hung up on the word success because in my mind, success, most people equate that to money. And I don't think that's success to your point is a subjective definition of how you define it. But so much research says that success and money don't go together with happiness.
No, and success really is just about you feeling accomplished, you feeling valued. Success is saying I've done something, I've finished something, I've accomplished something, I've created something, I've been there, I've done that. But success is always a moving target. You hit one goal, you go to the next goal, and that's the same thing as happiness. Happiness is a moving target. Happiness and success are a series of moments that we have. They're successful moments, happy moments, and we cannot be successful or happy 100% of the time. So my goal is to wake up, be excited about the happy, successful moments I'm going to have that day, really celebrate those, assess the ones that weren't so happy or successful, and tweak those so that I get more and more of the happy, successful moments and less of the not so happy successful moments. So then that way it just becomes a stepping stone for me that I build up and build up and build up this repository of happy successful memories that help me wake up in the morning and go, I have a happy successful life.
Well, Dana, thank you. And I mean this truly. Thank you so much for your time, energy, and honesty. I have so much respect for you as a stay-at-home mom and business owner because, you know, as a dad of four, I had such a hard time pushing those kids out of my vagina that I can only understand the difficulties you go through. So thank you.
Oh my goodness. I can only imagine how much fun we would have if we were out drinking together. Like if you're ever in San Diego, let me know. Cause I feel like the four of us would probably have a good time.
Well, thank you again for your time, energy. I really appreciate you coming on Executive After Hours and your honest and open conversation.
Well, thanks for having me.